Hello?
Oh, hello, Dr. Bergen. Hello, welcome to the call.
Hi, sorry about that. I had a little problem connecting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're able to get through to us now. We've got your slides up. I hope you can see them.
Yeah, I can. And do you move to the next slide, or would I do that?
Yes, we should be able to. If you just say next slide, we should be able to do that for you.
So, okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me to give an overview. So I work for the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative based out of our London labs at the Chelsea Westminster Hospital, Imperial College in London. And I was hoping to give you just a brief overview for HIV vaccines and the research that's ongoing in Europe and leave the real silence to all the other speakers who will be presenting after me. So if you could go to the next slide. So at the moment, we're actually in a very interesting stage of HIV research where there are a lot of treatment-based therapies which seem to be giving at least interesting data for HIV prevention. So there's been some very nice studies in South Africa, specifically the CAPRISA group with microbicides. There's been the use of antiretrovirals for pre-exposure and post-exposure prophylaxis. But a lot of these methods, realistically from us, our viewpoint is it's a stopgap solution, and the only real way to prevent the global pandemic of HIV is through the use of a HIV vaccine. And over the last sort of year or so, there's been data coming out of the trial that was performed in Thailand, which is the first real indicator that we might be able to get an effective HIV vaccine. So if you could go to the next slide. This was a trial called the RV144 trial, which was performed in Thailand in collaboration between the Thai government and the US military. And they seem to have shown a modest efficacy in the vaccine of around 30%. This isn't a massive increase in protection, but it starts to show that we might be able to do something with a vaccine. One of the main issues for us is it's not really a vaccine that you would carry forward into production. And it's failed to really be significant enough to engage big pharmaceutical companies in investing in more investment in HIV vaccines. And there's still a lot of challenges which are going to come up for the development of the HIV vaccine. And this is really through addressing the hypervariability of HIV as a virus. And the fact that to really have an effective vaccine, there's a very, very short window of opportunity where somebody's exposed and gets the HIV, the virus infection in the first place. So it's a very small window of opportunity where you want your vaccine to work. So next slide. So what you can see here is it's really an indication of one of the main routes of infection for HIV. So in a lot of the countries where we work, the HIV virus is transmitted still predominantly through sexual intercourse. And what you can see in the picture on the right-hand side is a kind of description of the mucosal layer in the vaginal space or rectal space where people get infected. And the little yellow dots on the outside represent the virus. And there's kind of like a wall of epithelial cells which overlay the underlying mucosal tissue. And the virus needs to get through that wall and infect cells underneath. And the way you can think of it is in this very small window of exposure where somebody's exposed to HIV, there's a lot of virus outside. And it's really only one or two virus particles that pass through in the underlying mucosal tissue where it can gain a foothold and start to replicate. At this initial stage, the use of antibodies could theoretically stop virus getting through the epithelial cell layer into the underlying tissue just by binding to it and making it too big to get through. Another possibility is once you get into the infected, just one or two virus particles in the underlying tissue, antibodies can then stop virus infecting cells and starting to replicate. And this all happens in the first hours or days of infection. Once the virus has really established itself in that tissue, it replicates to large numbers and starts to disseminate through the body. At that stage, antibodies are going to have a very limited effect, but through the use of cells, immune cells such as T cells and other cells which can kill these infected cells, you can really limit the infection. So what you can do is you can stop the HIV virus progressing to disease. At this stage, which is weeks to months to years past that initial infection, you're not going to prevent the infection, but you could stop the severity of disease which comes with full-blown AIDS. Next slide. So what we believe, and I think a lot of people are starting to believe, is that for an effective HIV vaccine, you're likely to need both arms of the adaptive immune response. And this is through the use of those antibodies which are produced by B cells to stop the virus spreading and starting that initial infection, but also with a slightly later response coming from cell-mediated immunity. And this is shown on the left-hand side where you've got a cell saying TH and another cell saying CTL. Once these cells recognize HIV-infected cells, they can act to kill the cells before the virus can replicate too much and spread into neighboring cells. But at this stage, you've got your established infection, and all you really will do is limit disease. In the past sort of decade or so, most people working on HIV vaccines, and us as well, the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative, have focused on this sort of cell response type vaccine. And the aim here is to really stop the progressive disease, which is the complication of HIV. From the results from that TIE trial, it starts to look as though the antibody response might be more applicable to this vaccine and actually easier to induce than we expected. But it's likely that both of these arms will be required for an effective vaccine. So next slide. So what we just wanted to show you here was show you all the different countries in the world which are involved in HIV vaccine research. And what this map shows in blue are countries where vaccine candidate clinical trials have been performed or where they are ongoing. And what you can see is predominantly it's in developed countries such as the US or here in Europe where we tend to go, and down in Australia. But what's important to note as well is the worst impact of this global pandemic is in low and middle income countries such as in Eastern and Southern Africa and in South America. And a lot of the European research groups who are actually working on these vaccines, while they are based and funded out of Europe, a lot of their impact is in these low middle income countries where they're actually doing studies. And just as an example here, is a couple of groups based out of Karolinska that do a lot of work in Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania and other countries. And ourselves and others at Imperial College in Oxford also working in Eastern Southern Africa. So next slide. This is just focusing a little bit more into Europe. And what you can see is there are actually quite a few countries in Europe working on these type of vaccine candidates. And these maps were taken off the IRB report webpage, and there's a link underneath. It's not really exhaustive, but it was updated last in October 2012. And this is really seeming to focus more on preventative vaccines. There is another type of vaccine which is based on attempting to treat HIV-infected people called therapeutic vaccines. And there is a lot of work being done in the same countries and actually in Norway as well on these. On the map on the right-hand side is just taken from the same database, countries engaged at present in active and ongoing HIV vaccine trials. So they tend to be short-term, but there's a lot of work going on in Sweden, Italy, and the UK, to name a few others, who are actually performing trials as we speak. So next slide. So I just wanted to give you a very brief overview to talk about what we actually mean when we talk about these broadly neutralizing antibodies and how we would want to induce them. So next slide. In this picture, what you can see is on the left-hand side, there's a graphical representation of flu, of the influenza A virus. And on the right-hand side is a representative picture of a generic HIV virion showing the difference in complexity. And the take-home message from this is, for a virus comparatively that much simpler than HIV is influenza flu, we still need to generate a vaccine yearly against what we think is the most likely strain of influenza that is coming out, is going to come out that year. So it's just trying to get across the amount of variability that does exist with HIV and why it's going to be a much more complex virus to generate a vaccine against. Next slide. So when we talk about neutralizing antibodies, what we're trying to do is block the ability of the virus, once it's in the host, getting into a host cell. So on the bottom of this picture, you have a representation of a HIV virion. And on the top of the surface, you can see these structures, which in this case are envelope trimer spikes. That's just a protein expressed on the surface of the virus. When the virus infects a person, that protein interacts with other structures on the host cell. And these are shown on the top of the picture, with CD4 and CCR5. The easy way to think of this is to think of a lock and key mechanism. So next slide. As a lock and key, what you want is, from the virus point of view, the virus proteins interact with the host cell proteins, and that allows the virus to gain entry. With these broadly neutralizing antibodies, you want to block that. So it's kind of like blocking the keyhole so that the virus can't get into the cell. So it can bind either to proteins on the virion or onto proteins on the host cell. So next slide. When they talk of, so that's a neutralizing antibody in its simplest form. When they talk about broadly neutralizing antibodies, it's really to try and get around the complexity of that HIV virion. So not just getting one type of antibody to react against a single strain of HIV. You want to increase breadth in your antibodies. So you want to look at how many types of virus, different strains of the HIV virus, can the neutralizing antibody block. The more you can block, the better it is, because there's more chance it will prevent infection. You also want to know how well they inhibit. So if you're going to induce these antibodies as a result of a vaccine, the less amount of antibody you need to prevent that interaction, the better your vaccine is. It can be very difficult to produce very high concentrations of antibody as a result of a vaccine. Next slide. So this is just a table showing some broadly neutralizing antibodies that have been recently discovered compared against a few years ago. So the first neutralizing antibody is up on the right-hand top side of that graph, called 4E10. And this was really discovered in the late 80s, early 90s. And what it did do was, when they isolated it, it showed the ability to inhibit that interaction in almost 100% of the viruses from HIV that they tested it against. The problem they found was to actually have an effective response to block that antibody, the virus interaction, they needed a very high concentration of the antibody, which was unlikely to be produced by a vaccine. As you move across the graph to the left, you start to see new neutralizing antibodies that have been discovered by groups in Europe and the US, which work at lower concentrations, up to the ones called PGT-128 and 121 on the far left-hand side, which work at concentrations of down to almost 0.3, 0.5 micrograms per mil, which are really the type of concentration that we know we can induce by vaccines as a result of a vaccination. So it's starting to find antibodies that we might be able to use in vaccines. Next slide. The final arm of this is to, in combination with antibodies, to try and get a cell-based vaccine which will act then to mop up any of those viruses which do the antibody and start to replicate in the host. So next slide. If you could just press one more time, there should be some lines on here. No. Okay. So if you could go back on. There should be some lines on here coming up, which hopefully if you can download the slides, you'll see. There's a paper reference on the bottom of here from pathogens. So So what this graph was to show was a lot of these type of experiments have been done in non-human primate models, so using rhesus macaques and other monkey models. And what they've seen is if you use live virus, and in this case they use one called SIV, which is the simian version of the human HIV, when you vaccinate using live virus, you can induce a cell response in the monkey, which when you then challenge them with a pathogenic virus strain later, you can show a reduction in the viral load. So what it's showing is we can actually induce cell responses in non-human primates, which can prevent either infection or progression to disease. And this has been really exciting data coming out from a lot of groups over the last couple of years. Where we have lost is the ability to translate it into the host, into humans. So we haven't really found a virus which is harmless enough to cut into people as a vaccine candidate. But there has been a lot of work going on with virus vectors and other models. And hopefully the next couple of speakers might give you a bit more information on this. So next slide. That was all I was going to give you as an overview, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bergin. That was a really nice overview, I think, and you managed to get a lot in there. Thank you for that and keeping to time. I really liked the slide of showing the genetic variability comparing just one type of HIV found in the Congo against the global flu vaccine. I think that's a very powerful slide. And I think the way that you presented both arms of the research investigation at the moment was very helpful. Thank you. So for those of you who aren't perhaps seeing the slides, you need to log in online. I hope everybody is there. And you can also type your messages and questions into that box there in the bottom left-hand corner and raise questions that way. We are getting some great questions in. I think we'll go to one now, actually. Gabrielle Brocha in Spain is asking about whether there are any new R&D strategies on HIV vaccine research that are very promising for European research centres. Do you have anything to add on that or to respond to that, Dr. Bergin?
So, yeah, some of the things we've been working with that show very promising results and a lot of people are is the rational design of these antibodies. So we've started to find a lot more neutralizing antibodies. And what we can do, and it's been shown by a very nice VRC paper from the Vaccine Research Center in the US, was you can actually take the antibody and using mathematical modeling, work backwards to generate an antigen which you can vaccinate with to induce that antibody. And it's all a lot of chemistry-based stuff, which I really don't get very well. But it's really new techniques which have come up over the last sort of 3 to 4 years. Unfortunately, a lot of that is being done out of the US, but some things that is being done a bit here in Europe and we're starting to work with is the use of replicating vectors. So what we've seen from the non-human primate models is some of the best vaccines that we can find to protect the non-human primates is replicating live virus. Now, in most cases, this is something that you wouldn't want to vaccinate people with, but in other vaccines in the past have shown really the best sort of protection. So like yellow fever, where you use a live attenuated strain, but it continues to replicate. So we have been working with a lot of European groups as well to find vectors where we can use it to insert parts of the genome of HIV, but use a non-pathogenic or non-human virus or vector, so it will continue replicating, so you will get a continual boost to the immune response.
Great, thank you. And another question that's coming in is from James Talley. Are any of these antibody options being looked at as PrEP? Do we know?
I believe they have been, but you've got some people on the phone who might know more. They would be used in the more in post-exposure prophylaxis, I believe.
Okay. Well, does anyone who is on the line, I know that we have Dr. Scarlatti on the line, and possibly Dr. Brander as well should be there. Does anyone have any comment on the link between these vaccine antibody approaches and PrEP?
Hi, this is Gabriella Scarlatti. PrEP is not, feels that the right thing. It's not yet in use. What is used is antibodies are used for therapeutic purposes. So they are provided to patients, HIV-infected patients. It's still ongoing, and it's not in a used regularly. There are some trials that have been done. Otherwise, I know that there are some groups working on the use of antibodies on vaginal rings so that they can be constantly in the vaginal environment. There are different aspects that have been approached in these recent years, but there is not yet anything definitive.
James Talley wants to mention slow-release, nano-release monthly injections. Would that be something that's being looked at within the range of options?
Monthly release of injections of monoclonal antibodies has been tried. There is a study that was done by together with a Swiss group, an Austrian group, and unfortunately it didn't work with the one antibody that Phil mentioned, because they used the 4E10 antibody, and it didn't work as well as we anticipated. But there are new ideas coming up just now by combining different antibodies, 4, 5, and recently it's still in the animal model, but the combination of 4, 5 antibodies given once or twice every 3, 4 weeks could be an option, but only by combining more antibodies, not only one.
Okay, great. Thank you. For those of you who are asking about the slides, we will make these available. We are recording the webinar, and everything will be available on the internet on our website, avoc.org, and I'm sure NAM will do the same. So do look out for those so that you can take away these to look at. We're now going to move on. If there's no further questions, do keep the questions coming in, but if there's nothing pressing for Dr. Bergen, and we will have a chance at the end, I'd like to move now to Dr. Scarlatti, who we've just been hearing from, to present the work of Europrize and the Engine Consortium, and also the work that the ARNS have been doing. Gabriella has to leave us quite early, so I want to push on with that. So please go ahead, Dr. Scarlatti.
Thank you very much, Rebecca, and good afternoon to everybody. As Rebecca said, I will try to present you three different realities that have been and are ongoing in Europe, and with different goals also. And the first one is Europrize. That is a project that has been financed by the European Commission. And it is a network of excellence, so it's not a basic research project that is financed or a clinical trial that is financed by the European Commission, but it's networking. And as you can see in the lower part of the slide, there is a lot of red dots that means the countries and groups that are involved throughout Europe. You can see that it goes from Russia through Sweden, Scandinavia, Middle Germany, all over, and it's more almost 60 institutes that are involved. And the goal of Europrize is essentially networking and to put together people that are experts in the different fields, in vaccine research, but also microbicide research. And as you see in the upper part, it's called European Vaccine and Microbicide Enterprise. So It put together all people that have all these different expertise that are needed to proceed in research from the very basic to clinical trial ethics, and also community people were involved in this network. I can go to the next slide, I think. Yes. And essentially, I can tell you what Europrice achievements were in these 5 years of financing and work that was done by all together. It established itself because as an international driving force, because all these groups were very much dispersed through Europe, and they started really to coordinate what their expertise was on the different fields. And that has been a kind of also driving force to get in communication with other groups, not only in Europe, but also towards other areas of the world. The other big project that was part of the Europrice network was to establish a PhD training program, and this was extremely successful in sense that we managed to have young people trained, and they could really go from one lab to the other or from one clinic to the other, training from one place to the other, having projects that were transversal between the different groups so that they could learn more in specific and very much detail what was going on in microbicide and vaccine research. The PhD training program was also giving courses to the students that were kept in the different institutes throughout Europe, and they could participate in one or the other. And again, it was really courses that one week or 10 days courses that were covering from the different areas that they needed, from the basic immunology, virology, clinical aspects of how to keep a clinical trial, community-based problems, and so on. As I said, one of the big achievements of this the Europrice network was the international visibility, because it was not any more small groups around in Europe that do all of them great research, but on the other hand are really were dispersed through Europe, but we were a big group that could be a driving force, and this made it that we could have more and more international collaborations with different types of bodies that were NIH, but also the Gates Foundation and their partners of IAVI with whom we started collaborations. And as I said, one of the major areas was that the combination of use of vaccine and microbicides, because as you heard from Phil, nowadays we know that we can use microbicides to prevent, but we are still behind in vaccine research, but the use of both might be the way to go for, and we will have to face this in the future already now. So this was one of the new approaches that was really to combine, and I will tell you later how it's proceeding. As you see, there have been quite a number of publications in this 5 years that came from different groups and collaborations within these groups that of the Europrice network, but also with other groups outside the network. In the next slide, I can tell you a few more details, like there is a weekly bulletin that has been sent out, and we had more and more subscribers beyond the group of Europrice that could take part of it, and it was also providing literature in all the different fields throughout, so we were getting a nice overview of what was published every week on the different subjects. It has been also a major hub for providing reagents for all the labs and the clinical work, This is in collaboration with the NABSC in HPA in UK that was gathering reagents from all the groups that were participating to EuroPrize and then providing it to other groups that needed it. So there was a kind of sharing of material that would drive further the research also of other groups besides your own one where you have been providing the reagents. As I said, the European Pan-European PhD training program has trained more than 60 students, and many of those now are postdocs in and have been also leaving Europe or going from one country to the other. It has been very exciting to work together with these PhD students and to have the courses with them. As I said, EuroPrize is not really financing directly except a few clinical trials that you see below that they're supported partially by EuroPrize, and you will hear more about the HIVIS project like by Eric Sandstrom later on, but it is also involved in quite a number of clinical trials and also macaque studies that try to combine vaccine and microbicides. The last thing that EuroPrize did was also to try to finance small projects, proof of concept projects, so that we had some internal calls where people could participate, also with other partner outside, and giving some seed money to start up a new project that then could get financing through other sources. Now, one of the projects that was started up and is still ongoing, and that was one of the major goals of EuroPrize, was really to combine microbicides and vaccines, as I told you. And if you go to the next slide, there was a rationale behind that, as we said, vaccinated individuals may benefit from different approaches that are not only vaccine that we don't have yet, as Phil told you. We have an exciting period, but we don't have anything that is really preventing transmission. But the combination with other type of prevention could be winning, and it may be more efficient than one or the other strategy alone. And as Phil said, that mucosal exposure is also the way that HIV is acquired most of the time. And so we started a study in which we wanted to test this hypothesis and to combine the different aspects. But obviously we did it in it's a macaque study in non-human primates. And the study, simply as it says in the last part of the slide, is that we used already available products, and we used the part of the envelope, the GP140 that you heard before from Phil, that should induce neutralizing antibodies. And they were given two different GP140 that reflect one, the subtype B, and the other one, the subtype C of HIV-1. So we wanted to see if we could evoke neutralizing antibodies against both viruses. And we thought also that by giving the vaccine first mucosally and then systemic, we could enhance the response at mucosal site and get also response at the systemic, so in the blood circulation. And this was what we did in the macaques, giving first intranasally and then intramuscularly the two proteins. But the idea was then to combine it with a prevention of a microbicide. And we went along with the recent findings when we started the project, and we provided tenofovir gel, 1%, when we challenged the animals. Challenge means when we gave the virus to the animals intravaginally in this case. I can't, unfortunately, give you yet the results because the study is now ongoing. I can only tell you that there are neutralizing antibodies that were evoked towards both strains, and we are just now finishing the challenging period, and so we will know soon if this is a protective, if the combination of the two approaches is working better than not one or the other approach alone. So this is a general overview of what Europrize did in the 5 years. Unfortunately, the financing was finished by summer last year, and so kind of the collaborations continue, and obviously the networking of the different labs is still ongoing, but without financing, it's many of the activities have obviously stopped, and this is a pity that unfortunately the European Commission did not kind of grasp and try to continue this network. So in the next slide, I want to present you a project that started in 2008 and finished also this one in 2012. And this is a more basic research project. So again, it's financed by the European Commission during the 7th framework program, so the one that is now ongoing. And the project is called ENGINE, and the acronym for Next Generation HIV-1 Immunogens Inducing Broadly Reactive Neutralizing Antibodies. As I said, it started in beginning of 2008 and is now already finished. But in the next slide you can see the participants. Again, it's a pan-European, there are many partners all over Europe that participated, and here we had both research institutes but also small and medium enterprises that were participating, one from Sweden and two from Switzerland. In Europrize there were also some big companies that were part of it. I forgot to say it was like Novartis, Sanofi, and Glaxo, and also smaller companies were also part of it, because it's essential to collaborate between the research institutes and the industry. So to give you an insight of what ENGINE was about, I mean, you see it already from the title, and what we wanted to develop immunogens that induce neutralizing antibodies, broadly reactive neutralizing antibodies, that you heard from Phil, this is one of the strategies. And in the next slide, you see the hypothesis that we had, and it was essentially a kind of easy or a very simple one, that we started from the point that we know that approximately 20% of the HIV-1 infected individuals after 2, 3, 4 years, but it's only 20% of the individuals, develop cross-neutralizing antibodies. So, and we tested through the DIS consortium we had, we could test more than 400 individuals, HIV-infected persons, and around this time, around the 3 years from infection, and test to see if they had neutralizing antibodies, but broadly neutralizing antibodies we were interested in. Our hypothesis is that if a virus that has infected this person can induce broadly neutralizing antibodies in this person, it's a virus that has an envelope that is of interest and that we should study and use to produce a new immunogen that would be able to induce, again, broadly neutralizing antibodies when used as a vaccine. So in those persons that have these broadly neutralizing antibodies, we isolated the virus that was present at the very, very beginning of the infection, so during the acute phase or the first 6 months from infection, and developed GP140s. So we decided to go for the envelope part that it of the GP120 plus a part of the GP41, so the GP140. We did different types of preparations of it, like proteins by itself or expressed as DNA or expressed on virus-like particles that are particles that resemble the virus and express the protein that we have added to it, or also virosomes. That's essentially a similar approach. In the group, we had also different laboratories that are usually involved in adjuvant research. So we decided to use either two adjuvants that are already available on the market, but also to develop new types of adjuvants. And then these proteins that we developed in the different forms, or the GP140s that we developed, were first tested in mice to see if they were working, but mainly what we were interested was to inject them in rabbits at first and see if we could induce cross-neutralizing antibodies. The one GP140s that worked in the rabbits, so that they induced good cross-neutralizing antibodies, were then tested in macaque, in non-human primate model. I put an arrow to the after the macaque to the human being, to then because our project was not supposed to continue in a clinical trial, proof of concept phase one, but we were supposed to stop with the macaque experimentation. In the next slide, you see how we were kind of structured in our consortium, in the engine consortium, and you see that we had the first people that were involved in the immunogen design, who was involved in the vector design, who in adjuvant, as I told you, and then the three components were then tested in animals, and we had several laboratories that are experts in testing neutralizing antibodies, but also other types of immune responses necessary for this project. And to the right side, you see the reagent repository that, as I told you already, in the EuroPrize program was very, very important, and we had also here a great collaboration with them, because we provided them with reagents, but we got also a lot of reagents through the reagent program. I want only to tell you that in the next slide you see where we reached till now. It's still ongoing, also this, because we developed seven GP140 envelopes that were able to induce broad neutralizing antibodies in the rabbits. And three of those we decided to forward into macaques. Means they have been tested in a macaque, and as you can see from the scheme, we decided to go for an immunization protocol that was using already two different forms of this envelope. One was, first we were injecting it as DNA, and in this regard we also tried to use different way to administer it by electroporation. That this is possibly Eric Sandstrom will give you some more also in that respect, but it's a way to administer cutaneously the immunogen, so that it's dispersed better in the cute and it arrives better to the cells that should present the immunogen. And after giving the DNA, we were giving the protein intramuscularly, and we are almost at the end of the project, because we have already now tested some of the animals by challenging them low dose intravaginally, because there are different ways how to challenge, but we thought that this is the best, or the best is a great word, but the closest to what happens in as human, and that is low doses of virus giving repeatedly through time, and it means that we were giving 8, 9, 10 challenges before an animal really get infected. Again, I'm sorry, I can't tell you. I know only that the animals have cross-neutralizing antibodies, but I can't tell you if it works or not. We are still waiting to continue with the study after the challenge.
I hope that you'll be able to report back to us in due course then, Dr.
I hope so.
We are getting a couple of questions in pertinent to what you've just been saying before we go into the ANRS slides, which we'll have to go quite briefly through in the interest of time. Gus Cairns from NAM, who's going to present the next webinar on microbicides, is saying that the webinar is going to look at the work of CHARM, with a 2A, CHAARM Microbicides Consortium, which is a part of the 7th EU Framework Programme, EuroPrize. I want to ask you, he wants to ask you how the two projects have collaborated and communicated, especially as you've just now talked about projects having to be terminated because grants ended, and whether the way the EU finances research may sometimes act to make communication and continuity difficult.
Essentially, CHARM has started 1.5 years ago, I would say. Now, I don't know the exact date. And it's focusing mainly on microbicides. And I would say that it is part of CHARM is a kind of extension from one part of EuroPrize. So EuroPrize has been a network, but CHARM is really more doing real basic research. Now, the point that he brought up is that it is difficult, in fact, to continue doing research at European level because there is no continuity on the different projects. So the moment that EuroPrize has finished, it only parts of EuroPrize has like CHARM, has had the possibility to participate to a call by the European Commission and obviously was selected by peer review and so on and so on after peer review. But only that part of EuroPrize could really continue so only the arm with the microbicide arm of EuroPrize in a way has a continuation, whereas the European Commission has now financed some new smaller projects on vaccine research, but does not anymore finance the interaction between the two arms, like microbicide and vaccine. That was one of the major goals of EuroPrize, even if it has been very successful.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. It's very problematic to go on, really, and sometimes we have to stop a certain point because there is no more financing and the European Commission does not provide any more calls that are going along the line that was financed until one day before.
Thank you. We're getting a question in about to what extent the financial crisis is responsible for this reduction in financing from the EU. Is this a question of larger economic factors, or is it the Commission's preference of what it wants to fund?
I don't think it's the Commission what it wants to fund, but I know that in these days the European Parliament is just discussing how much to allocate in the next framework program that is called Horizon 2020, and it will start in 2014 and end in 2020. And they are speaking about a budget that could be reduced of 30% from what it was originally supposed to be. So the different countries are not able to participate as much as they really were anticipated only a short while ago. So it's not a matter of what wants to be financed only. Obviously, there has to be possibly more how to say, in HIV research in the last year, it has not been so much money put into it by the commission, but there was more money put into in the previous years. That's true. We hope that in the next program there will be again frontline HIV research. Obviously, this is there is. I think that it has to come from all of us, from the community, from the researcher, from all of us, that we have to do the pushing to, on a political basis, to show that there is still the need to continue and not to leave it to non-European research only. But certainly the big crisis has not helped or will not help in the future.
So, Dr. Scarlatti, do you have time to just share with us briefly the work that's going on in France?
Yes.
And then, you know, feel free to go to your next meeting. I know you have to go somewhere else. So, we just
thank
briefly.
I apologize that I have to leave, but there was a change of program, unfortunately.
Yeah,
if we go to the next slide, I can in a few minutes present you what is going on just now in France, but it's on a more open basis. And the French government has... do you have the next slide? Hello? Yes, here it is. Thank you. Has, you know that the French Medical Research Council, that is the INSERM, has an agency that is dedicated to research on HIV, AIDS, and hepatitis, the INRS, and through that has always been financing projects on HIV and hepatitis research. And one of the recent projects or enterprises that were financed by the government also is the Vaccine Research Institute. At the director is, as you can see here, is Dr. Professor Yves Lévy, staying in Paris at Mondor. And it's the whole institute is institute-based. It's not virtually only in one location, but it has many collaborators. And here you see in the different boxes, in the blue bar, the different aspects that are taken in consideration in this institute. And you see also who is involved in the different parts. And essentially, if you think, I didn't show you the institutes that are there, part of it, but you have the institute in Strasbourg, you have the Pasteur, you have the Mondor, no, I miss a few, sorry, but there are different, so it's in, based in Paris, but also it collaborates with several other institutes around in France, but not only in France. The idea is, the mission essentially is to conduct research in the next slide, to accelerate the development of effective vaccine against HIV/AIDS, but also against hepatitis, and especially hepatitis C for the moment. And I will show you very the next slide. As you can see, there are different projects that are integrated through the different groups. And again, it goes through the development of different antigens that can be used for vaccine, how to deliver the antigens, and also how to study the immune protection in HIV disease, but also induced by a potential vaccine. And obviously it has a part that has to go through the non-human primate, how to select the different vaccine, and it has also a large part on clinical trials. And in the right part of the slide you see which are the different vaccine candidates that have been kind of gathered in the Vaccine Research Institute through the expertise of the different groups. And one of them that could be more kind of new is the second one, the fusion protein, that as essentially is a protein, is an antibody that carries at the end, you see this kind of red cloud, a protein that is the one of the virus. And we have decided either to combine the antibody with different parts of the virus that can be the envelope but also the core. And the antibody is directed towards specific molecules that are expressed on the dendritic cells. This is what interests us most, because we think that by targeting the dendritic cell, by bringing through the antibody directly to the dendritic cell, the part of the virus that is important to induce immune response, then by targeting directly to the dendritic cell, we would have a better response to the vaccine. Otherwise, you see the different types of vaccine that also Phil has been speaking about that are part of this consortium that were brought together by the different groups. If you go to the next slide, you see that that it's not only the groups that I mentioned to you, and here you see them all, but at the end there is a large consortium also with a private part and different companies that are interested or are in the type of research that is developed by the Vaccine Research Institute. And I'm in the next slide, I want to make the point that in fact what has been you heard until now was that we need a prophylactic vaccine, so to prevent infection. But in this consortium, so I will not go into that, but what the consortium is also into is the Vaccine Research Institute is into therapeutic immunization, because what we think is that we might make use of vaccines to reduce the virus load, to combat the virus when a person is already infected. And this would also help to confine the virus first, but also to confine all what is nowadays associated with heavy heart treatments, and that you see in the right part of the slide, with accelerated aging, different types of cardiovascular or neurological disorders, and so on. So in this respect, I want only to show you very briefly what is a clinical trial that is ongoing, and this is done not in macaques, as until now I showed you only trials in macaques, but it's done in with HIV-infected persons, and it's in the next slide, and it's called the DALIA trial. And it's the acronym for dendritic cells and lipo-5 immunization against AIDS. And it is based on the assumption that if we take the dendritic cells of the patient, we load them with different antigens of the virus, these lipo-5 lipoproteins, and there are 5 different ones, we re-inject the dendritic cells into the patient, and we will have a strong immune response that can help confining replication of the virus. The study is close to an end. We have already some data. We know that there are both cellular and antibody responses that are evoked, but I can't tell you more than that. You can see that there's several vaccinations, and then the patient is followed, is on heart, obviously, and then we interrupt heart and follow the patient for another 24 weeks till the end of the study, that is 48 weeks. I think I conclude here. So I gave you a kind of overview of what are the different activities that are ongoing in Europe. Obviously, these are only a few of them, but I think I gave you a small kind of blip of what's going on.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Scarlatti. It's been great to hear about all those different programs, and particularly just at the end there about the therapeutic vaccine approaches that are being looked at in France. So, and I think we're going to hear more about that from our speaker in the moment. So thank you very much, and we'll
thank you.
Talking to you again in the future.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, if there's no other pressing questions, we'll move straight on because time is ticking away. And I think at this point I'd like to just check if we have Dr. Sandstrom from Tanzania dialing in. Is that...
Hello?
Hello. I'm going to go straight to you, Dr. Sandstrom, because we've had technical problems getting you on the line, and I'd like to keep you in the call. Please go ahead. Hopefully we'll have your slides up and ready.
Okay.
Let me just introduce you briefly while we're doing that. Dr. Sandstrom is on the faculty at the South Hospital Karolinska Institutet in Stockholm. The Karolinska Institute studies the safety of preventive HIV vaccines and the effect of therapeutic vaccines as an addition to antiretroviral therapy. Dr. Sandstrom is the investigator on several vaccine trials in Tanzania and Mozambique. So thank you. That's great. If you want to in.
Yeah, thank you. I bring you the reality from Africa, so I can't see my slides, and I hope that you can forward them as we go along. What I would like to do is to go to a much more practical level, and what I would like to convince you in the end is that we in Europe have immunogens and and schedules that are ready for efficacy studies. We are not certainly the only group that has reached this level, but I can only speak for the Hives and Tamovac consortium. I will apologize that the talk or the slides will be quite technical, because I really want to prove that we are here and now with immunogens that are worthy of efficacy trials. And I will not thus dwell so much on the fascinating story of capacity building in developing nations. The first slide shows the overall study plan for all of the studies that I will go into speak to. But I must emphasize that this really builds on a very long-term effort in Tanzania since 1986, and also a series of therapeutic vaccine trials dating back to the early 1990s that have been published, with also demonstrating the limited success of such approaches. In Tanzania, the real work started with a workshop in 2001, well before we had any kind of vaccine that was even on the horizon. And we were so happy to have a member of the EU, Michel Touchette, there, who offered us to build a consortium and apply for a grant that was then ready. At that time, the DNA approach seemed very feasible, being safe and also something that promised to be scalable and applicable in developing nations. The approach we took, if you look at the first slide, where you see the NABC, GAG-AB, illustrates that we wanted to create a multi-subtype vaccine suitable for the African situation. It was well known then that DNA are very hard to immunize with. So we elected to try to optimize the DNA delivery, as I will elaborate on, but also to give another vaccine. So even if we had small differences in our delivery, we would be able to discern them. And we were lucky enough to be able to use the MVA, modified vaccinia ankara, from Walter Reed. which I want to point out is a heterologous to the priming antigen. So we thus try to broaden the immune response both by the different subtypes and also by giving a heterologous boost. The question that we focused on in the beginning was to see if intradermal immunizations could be equivalent or better to higher doses given intramuscularly, as you will see most other groups are using. So thus, to come back to the top of the slide, we give the DNA vaccine three times with the fixed intervals of 1 and 3 months, and then we boost them, and we have successfully, as the trial has gone on, been compressing this schedule successively. When this started, it was thought that priming with DNA and boosting with MVA would only get you cell-mediated immunity. In other words, it would only protect you from disease if it was successful. And we had little hope to raise any antibodies. However, as I will show you and hope to convince you, is that a second MVA will indeed give you binding and neutralizing antibodies. So if we could move to the next slide, where we see the studies and timelines. And on the very top, where it says Stockholm, this was a phase one study that is necessary in order to move to a developing nation. We have to perform it sort of on our home turf so that we are not thought of being experimenting on anyone. And that really focused on safety and was not placebo-controlled. Having done that study, first with DNA and one MVA, we could get the permission to expand the study in a true placebo-controlled manner in Tanzania. And the basic question still was, is intramuscular immunizations with a standard dose equivalent or better to the intradermal dose with this bioinjector device? You will see later on in 2012, when we had the first result of the second MVA, that we wanted to see if the immune response really could be maintained over a long period. The results from this were very encouraging, as I will expand on the next slide. So we were motivated to see if the DNA delivery intradermally could be made even simpler, and to give only one instead of the five injections required to get enough DNA in the skin. And that in turn has now been complemented with a third boost with the envelope protein in a novel adjuvant to build on the RV144 study from Thailand that you just heard about, which used a pox virus like MVA and a protein like the one that the DV140. So just to try to see if this combination indeed would yield a much better result. In parallel, we expanded the trials to Mozambique, and since this was the first trial that they were ever embarking on, we chose a rather simple question, and that was to see if we could increase the amount of immunogen given in the skin from 0.1, which is the usually maximum that you can give in the skin, to 0.2, which is made possible by a novel device called Cetajet. And that trial has just been finished. Since we were convinced at this point that we would like to move into an efficacy trial. But in the wake of that, we wanted to further refine the intradermal delivery by giving so-called electroporation. And that is a series of short electric pulses, in our case 0.3 seconds in the skin, which is not used by most people using electroporation, over the site where the vaccine is situated. Thus, increasing the immunogenicity, trying to increase the immunogenicity, as so eloquently has been shown in smaller animals. So again, we did the first trial in Stockholm, Sweden, to see if this was well tolerated. And we are just now starting trials in Dar es Salaam, in Mbeya, and in Maputo to expand this in a study that can has the power to demonstrate the differences. So if we move to the next slide that says results, then you can see from the first series of studies in Sweden, this procedure, the intradermal injections and the MVA, they were very well tolerated. In a smaller attempt to boost this with granulocyte macrophage colony-stimulating factor, we did not see any benefit. The HEVIS-03 is really the meat of our studies so far. And we again could show that the procedure was well tolerated. And to our great satisfaction, there was very good immunogenicity with an almost 100% response, a very broad immunogenicity, and good levels of immune responses. Here we could show that intradermal delivery was actually better, even though it was a smaller dose, than giving it IM. We saw a balanced CD4 and CD8 response, also a balance between the responses to GAG and ENV. And here, GAG was dominant, which is important for controlling the virus if we should be infected. And broadly cross-reactant and persistent lymphoproliferative responses. And notably, all became serologically reactive after the second MVA. All responded in standard tests as if they were infected. And we could show that neutralizing antibodies turned up in 83%, albeit in a very easily neutralizable against the easy isolate. For the simplification in Tamovac 1, we could say that a simplification to two intradermal injections was not or was as good as the five intradermal, which allowed us to greatly simplify the injection scheme. And that in Maputo, that increasing the volume with this device, with Zetajet, was well tolerated and feasible. We don't have any immunological results from the intradermal electroporation as yet, but we can say that it's very well tolerated, and volunteers don't suffer any of the problems or discomfort that you can have by giving electroporation in a muscle with the twitching and so forth that is involved. So with that, I'll just rapidly move on because we're short of time.
I think, Dr. Sandstrom, we really want to hear everything that you're doing, but we've also got another speaker to share information with us. So I think we might just draw it to a close there, if that's okay.
Okay, so I started on my time, but I see. Fine.
I'm so sorry. We've just run over time, but thank you very much for sharing what you have, and I'm sure people can follow up with you if they do have further questions, and we're always interested to hear about what you're doing. So thank you for that overview. It's been very helpful. We'd now go to Dr. Branda for going from Tanzania to Catalonia. Professor Christian Branda should be on the line to speak to us about the HIVACAT Catalan HIV Vaccines Research Program based in Barcelona and to update us on the upcoming AIDS Vaccine Conference to be held there in September this year. For those of you still on the line, do keep sending any questions in. We might have a little bit of time just at the end for a few more questions. And those of you who want to know how to sign up for to get on our listservs, please go to AVAC, www.avac.org, and AIDSMAP.org, I think it is, for where you can sign up to any number of listservs for information there. Dr. Branda, are you available?
Hi, yes, I'm on.
Thank you. If you could just tell us briefly about the work you're doing in Spain, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, so let me go really quickly through this. And Rebecca, you may want to jump through some of the slides with animations quite rapidly. Just so quickly then, HIPACAT is the Catalan program for HIV vaccine research. We are focusing next slide on the development of preventive as well as therapeutic HIV vaccines. Can we please move forward one slide? Back one, please. Sorry, I was on the wrong surface. The HIPACAT is funded, it's really a unique structure that funds the HIPACAT program. HIPACAT joins two formerly competing institutions and research labs here in Barcelona, UC Gush on one hand and Fundació Clínic on the other hand, into a joint program of about 60 investigators. We are funded by a pharmaceutical company, Esteve, by a Spanish bank that still has money, La Caixa, and by the Catalan Generalitat, the local government. We also receive funding from the Spanish Ministerio de Salud, from European grants, from the NIH and other sources. But really, we are really a public-private partnership here that really works out. I think it's a fantastic model how HIV vaccine research can be supported and maintained even in times of crisis and shortages on all ends when it comes to funding, especially here in Spain, to maintain that funding. Next slide, please. Next slide. So here we are, about 60 investigators between the two sites. The program is directed by Bonaventure Claudet and Jose Maria Gate. I'm the scientific director of the program. We are built physically apart from each other, but we meet, of course, very regularly to really discuss and synergize. Next slide, please. We have strong collaborative links to many centers. For many years over at Mass General in Boston, and from that time we have links to Reagan Institute, to Harvard University, Mass General, but UMass and all other kind of universities in the U.S., as well as a very strong and long-lasting collaboration with IMPACT in South America and Lima, Peru, and as well as the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban. Next slide, please. Within Europe, we are linked with all major sites as well, of course, and we're closely collaborating with centers in the UK, in France, in Switzerland, and other places. Next, please. So we are working on two major areas these days. One is the development of a therapeutic vaccine for HIV-infected individuals. This has largely been based on the use of autologous cells that we load with autologous viral preparations, inactivated virus, and reinfuse that into individuals. And then on the other side, the prophylactic vaccine, preventive vaccine, we are working on our own developed T-cell and B-cell immunogen sequences and use some of those new immunogens to actually look for ways to use neutralizing antibodies, which then in turn could be used as therapeutic agents. Next, please. Next slide. One back, please. Sorry, it's just on my end here. Just quickly on the ongoing therapeutic clinical trial, the DCD2 trial was just recently published about 3 weeks ago. Are treated in individuals with a therapeutic vaccine using autologous dendritic and their own virus, and that in treatment-naive subjects about half log reduction viral load. That was transient, and people had eventually to start their treatment or at least went back to their original viral set point. But it was safe, and it was evidently feasible to reduce viral load even transiently. Then we just published a second arm of that DCV2 trial that was in treated individuals. People were interrupted to harvest the virus and the dendritic cells and then vaccinated, and eventually then treatment was stopped. There was a median one log reduction in viral load that has been published in Science Translational Medicine in the first week of January this year. Evidently, everybody had to go back on treatment, so it was not a durable reduction. But I think it's proof of concept. It's a positive signal that one can modulate viral loads with this kind of intervention. Next slide, please. On the preventive vaccine candidates, we're working on novel T-cell immunogen sequences, B-cell immunogen sequences. On the T-cell sequence, we are trying to follow novel approaches that improve the somewhat random selection of T-cell target immunogen sequences. We base our selections of subunits compositions on the data we have collected in more than 1,000 HIV-infected individuals with clade B and clade C infections, in whom we have identified those responses that are associated with in vivo control of viral replication. Now, this obviously reflects control of the virus in infected individuals. This may not necessarily be the responses that you need to defend against these infections. However, we do have a high density of CD4 epitopes in those constructs. We have a wide range of CTL epitopes that are presented on many different HLA class 1 molecules. So we have a good population coverage, a strong representation of helper cell responses, and that makes us believe that this is also useful as the T-cell component of a preventive vaccine to help produce the antibodies. Next slide, please. On the B-cell side, we follow the new path there. It's especially based on a random envelope library from which we isolate those envelope sequences that show the best binding to a series of different neutralizing antibodies. And we have gone through two of the libraries now, identified novel envelope sequences, and have used now this to immunize mice at least. And in those mice, we see actually broad neutralizing capacities of those sera compared to the backbone viral sequence that went into the library to generate the general the randomized mutations. So overall, we want to focus on those regions that seem to be most vulnerable to the virus and then get those sequences expressed in novel combinations with our T-cell immunogen. Next slide, please. And that's essentially just what I mentioned. We have then those antibodies, this envelope sequences, not only as an immunogen sequence, but we also want to put them through the test to generate B cells or identify B cells with broad neutralizing activity to actually isolate the antibodies. We are looking for that also in people that have gone on to treatment interruptions in whom we see strong fluctuations of antibody secreting cells. The frequency can go up and down tenfold, and with it, the neutralizing activity. So we think, and plus we have access to a few thousand people within the HIPAA program that are followed at the two clinical centers here. It's about 7,000 subjects to whom we have very direct access. There's lots of volunteers that want to be in our clinical trials, And so patient access combined with some of these new technologies, I think, will give us a good handle on making progress. Next slide, please.
Dr. Branda, just sorry to interrupt, but we are going to, unfortunately, have to wrap up in about 2 or 3 more minutes. So very sorry that we're running behind.
Next slide. So this is in the current lines. We have come from more cellular humoral immunity assay development to really 3 major lanes now of the new contracted period where we want to test those immunogens. Next slide, please. So, as you saw, imaging what I mentioned to you, identifying those good regions in green in the HIV controllers, put them into a immunogen sequence. We have testing DNA, MVA on loaded on HR proteins. We're working on the chimp adeno and VLPs. And we have gone up from murine studies where we see some good response. Please jump the next slide, go to the next one. With some murine data where we see a broad response, it would be the next slide, please. A broad response when we immunize mice with our DNA carrying our HepaCat T cell immunogen. We are doing this now with MVA prime boost. We get real robust responses, and we are quite confident about our results now, so that we are currently looking for the funding for GMP production to move this into clinical trials. And the last slide will be just the equivalent on our B cell immunogen sequence. As I mentioned, this is based on an envelope random library, as well as the segment in MPIR structure-induced protein neutralizing antibodies that we deliver in the different vectors that we have built it up in already. And also the trying to move this into human clinical trials. And the last slide, again, is the beginning. Just acknowledge the founders of the HIPAA program here in Spain.
Thank you very much, Dr. Branda. And we could have easily spent an hour on each of the presentations today, so I really appreciate your patience and your willingness to present under these conditions. We hopefully, this is just the start of our conversation, and we want to, on behalf of AVAC and NAM, I'd like to thank you all very much for your time, taking time out, particularly from your own research, to present to us. Before we do go, please take a note of the date of the next webinar in the series, and that's going to be on Tuesday, the 26th of February, at the same time, 2 p.m.
Hello, Rebecca.
Garcia. Yes, hello.
I interrupt. That is a provisional date at the moment. It's partially
okay.
On speaker availability, but you will get, it's likely to be, I'm 90% sure that will be the time and date. It depends a little bit on speaker availability. So we're just getting it together at the moment. But you will get an email from probably most of you from HIV Prevention, from preventionnews@nam.org.uk, inviting you to the next webinar. So please do come along and find out more about microbicides. That's my bit.
Thank you, Gus. That's great. We very much hope you'll all join us then, and we'll do our best to kind of keep to better time next time. Hopefully you've all taken away quite a lot from the presentations. There's a lot to take in there. So good luck, everybody, with the ongoing work, and hope to speak to you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.